It's Lance Armstrong week here on OTB.
Are you a complete rookie?
OTB Gold.
Listen to our interviews with the people closest to his story on the OTB Podcast Network.
Are you crazy?
We have a feature interview with Emma O'Reilly. Spoke to her last Friday when she was in town doing PR around her new book. She has a book out, obviously, about blowing the whistle on Lance Armstrong. Here's Oprah, that Oprah, grilling Lance Armstrong about his treatment of this Emma O'Reilly in that famous interview from 2013.
What do you want to say about Emma O'Reilly?
Hey, she's one of these people that I have to apologize to.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of these people that got run over,
mm-hmm.
got bullied.
Yeah. Isn't she you sued her?
To be honest, Oprah, we sued so many people, I don't even,
yeah.
I'm sure we did.
Yeah.
I have reached out to her and tried to make those amends on my own.
What doesn't make any sense. When people were saying things, David Walsh, Sunday Times, Emma O'Reilly, Betsy Andreo, many others were mm-hmm. saying things, you would then go on the attack for them. You're suing people and you know that they're telling the truth. What is that?
It's a major flaw. And it's a guy who expected to get whatever he wanted and to control every outcome. It's inexcusable. And that's when I say that there are people that will hear this and will never forgive me, I understand that. I do.
Well, Emma O'Reilly has managed to forgive Lance Armstrong. We're going to find out how next. The Race to Truth, Blowing the Whistle on Lance Armstrong and Cycling's Doping Culture is Emma O'Reilly's new book. And I'm delighted to say Emma O'Reilly is with us. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
The completion of a book, it's a big project. It takes a lot out of some people.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you?
It took a lot more out of me than I thought. You know, even though I've really actually, in the big scheme of things, really enjoyed it. It's been a really good part of this whole journey and it's really helped me kind of complete the whole circle. But yeah, it definitely had its ups and downs while I was doing it.
I have to say it's one of the most confusing preparations for an interview that I've ever done because it seems like everything I know about humanity is wrong. Lance Armstrong called you a whore and now you're friends. David Walsh called you a hero and now you're not friends. And I don't know how things
No, David like and I have never fallen out. No, and I wouldn't ever like to fall out with David. That would really personally upset me a lot because I've nothing but respect for him as a journalist and stuff. I'll stand by the fact I was naive and did feel that I got a bit ram-raided, whatever, that I naively kind of thought that there'd be other people whose names were getting mentioned in LA Confidential.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I wouldn't like to fall out with David.
But this is a relatively new sensation for you where you've kind of reflected on that period of time and thought, actually, hang on a second now, that wasn't...
No, I thought that at that time.
Okay.
And definitely David, in all fairness to him, has had to take a few narky phone calls from me during that time. That when I did get dropped in it and when I was the only person getting sued, well, if there were all these other witnesses, why was I the only person getting sued? And that's a question I would have asked David to his face by email, but on the phone and eye to eye.
And what's his answer?
You know, his answer was, I don't, and when I say I don't think, his answer was really, he was as stunned as me that the level of the aggression of Lance's attack and that we were all just floundering in this system that we just didn't know was ever going to be as bad as it was. Now, I'm not a journalist, so I had no experience of that this sometimes happens. David had no experience that it actually happens this aggressively. But I'd never heard. And even when I was being interviewed, he said they never sue
the individuals.
Interview. They sue the journalist, they sue the paper, but they never sue the person who gets interviewed.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
sometimes they do, it turns out. Yeah. Does that mean that you wouldn't do again what you did? You wouldn't give an interview to a journalist saying...
Yeah, no, I actually, now that it's all turned... If you'd asked me that question before the USAID report came out, I'd have said, no, it was a big mistake. I should never have given the interview. Because to me at the time, nothing good had come from it. All it had done was I got sued, David got sued, his life was made hell, my life was made hell. the problem in cycling wasn't getting cleaned up. Cyclists were still having these issues. The sport hadn't moved on. So until almost the USADA report came out, now the whole experience had only negative things. But now the USADA report has come out, and as someone turned around to me and said, looks like you were telling the truth all along.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Because other people are saying the same thing. He's like, no, I was telling the truth all along. They just, the system conspired against us.
Okay, so
at
you,
the time.
You would do it again?
Yeah, but I would try now, say, protect. Well, now, obviously, if it happened again, I would make sure, well, can I do it anonymously? Not that I agree with doing things anonymously anyway, but if I do it anonymously, what happens?
Yeah,
I will only come out and
affidavit.
Put my name to it if
yeah.
other people are putting it. I'd ask more pertinent questions now that I didn't before.
You're not that kind to David in the book.
Yeah, I don't mean to be unkind, but what I did, what part of the book for me was actually just saying the story through my eyes and through how I experienced it. And that's how I experienced it.
Because there's a bit at the end where you're talking about the upcoming Hollywood movie, and you're talking about how the journalist should never become the story, but in David's case it's far too late for that.
But that's, is that wrong?
I don't know, I'm just interested in your take on this, because like, from the outside it seems like this is his life's work, and you're one of the people who were involved in the story who has actually one of the most important pieces of evidence. You were there in the room when the doping happened, and you're the first person who says that.
And I feel if I'd realised just to the extent of what an important source I was, then maybe I could have asked a few more pertinent questions. But I was always led
to protect yourself.
Yeah, to protect myself. Yeah, and to protect those close to me, and to protect my home, to protect my livelihood. Because the way things went, I could have been bankrupt. I could have been out in the street. So, yes, now I would ask more questions.
Okay, taking all that on board, right? The single individual in the world who brings all this trouble to your doorstep, who puts your house at risk, who puts your relationship at risk, who has the prospect of ruining your life, he writes the foreword to your book.
No, but the single person who put all of my whole life at risk was me. I'm the one who spoke to David. So I brought all that on myself, really.
I don't think so.
Honestly, but I do.
I read that, and there was a quote in the interview that you gave to the Guardian where you were talking about how you felt like you deserved some punishment for breaking the omerta.
Yeah.
People who break the omerta deserve to be cherished and rewarded, and whistleblowers are the most important people in the world. You didn't bring that trouble to your doorstep. You told the truth. Lance Armstrong decided that he was going to continue lying and use all his money to continue cheating and to try and ruin your life.
But I think that makes it too simple, because we're all ultimately responsible for our own actions.
I agree with that.
You know, and really for the story, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, is I wanted to make the complex kind of situation, try and make it simple, but make it realise actually nothing is just as black and white as we say it is. There's lots of characters involved in everything, and there were lots of characters and lots of factors and lots of, and it just happened that one of them turned into a massive megalomaniac bully that was way out of control.
Yeah, he's now your mate.
But you know, and Lance put it kind of succinctly, he said we publicly fell out but never personally fell out. Now, we never personally fell out because we weren't talking, you know.
I would fall out with somebody who's sending the solicitors to my door.
Now, if I had got my hands on that lad over that period of time, yeah, there'd have been a falling out, all right.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm not... How he behaved was disgusting and just completely unacceptable.
See, the thing about the omerta is really interesting to me, because it feels like you don't reward yourself for helping... Now, it is very confusing, because there's a couple of aspects to that. Taking responsibility for your own actions. Mm. You were involved in doping. You were concealing a doper. Mm. You got the makeup.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that makes you as guilty as the doper in many respects.
I completely agree with you. And that was, but it took me 3.5 years before I started to realise that. It took me, and even though within cycling I had a reputation for being the clean soigneur, it still took me 3.5 years to realise, actually, no, I mean, you're not that clean. You did facilitate, and by staying quiet, you're part of that lie and you're protecting that lie. But just think of the process that it took me to get to the stage going, actually, do you know what? You have an obligation to speak out. But then by speaking out, I felt I was doing the right thing on one level. But then because I had been on the inside, and because I had been kind of had such intimate access to all these lads, I kind of realised, actually, you know what? By speaking out, I'm making their life hell. But apparently, I thought by making their life hell, say, for 6 months, means it hopefully help it clean up and change things for the present generation and future generations of cyclists. But then Lance went on the attack and took it personally. And there, to me, was It wasn't personal. It was about the system. And Lance was the biggest symptom of the system.
Yeah, and the biggest manipulator of the system and the biggest,
yeah.
And also the biggest beneficiary of the system. You
yeah.
know, he made $75 yeah. million dollars
yeah,
out of it.
Absolutely,
so.
Yeah.
But breaking the Omerta was a really good thing. And you still see it as like a negative.
No, now that, and that's why now I see it as a good thing. And now I see that, and I would like to think, if I could flatter myself enough, that I've tried to help bring about a change, a positive change. But until the USADA report came out, there was nothing but negatives.
Yeah.
You know.
And so when did you start? So do you still feel like you needed to be punished for breaking the Omerta?
I guess actually, no, now, no. But back then, yeah. You know, and obviously, too, the more Lance went on the attack, the more I felt, well, vindicated almost for coming out. You know, but I think what I did feel bad was, like, some of these other riders and some of the staff and things, these are people I worked with. These are people that I've shared good times, bad times, been on the road for 10 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
You bond a lot with that. And yet there was me basically calling them dopers, making their life hell, meaning and known, because I did the 98 tour. I know what it's like for the police to show up at the hotel. And in France, the room used to be 72 hours without even a phone call. And that I was putting that heat on my old teammates and my work colleagues. That there's a lot of guilt involved in that.
And does that pass over a period of time, that guilt?
Yeah, that guilt has now passed. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's part of myself and Lance talking. Because like, I've spoken to Johan, George, Tyler, like a few of the others, not just Lance. And it's just so much nicer to actually, now that we've all done the full circle, that we've kind of been through the goods, the bads, the ups and the downs.
Yeah, it's a really weird situation.
Yeah, and it's like, well, George, one time I spoke to him, he said, Emma, you know what, you were the one that was right all along. You were the one who was actually telling the truth. We were all lying. And, you know, it really meant a lot to me for him to say that, because in a sense, he too had forgiven me for speaking out, you know. And I thought, well, actually, we've all kind of developed and grown from this whole thing.
Now, has Lance, because before I came in, I watched the Late Late Show appearance that was very much, I think, in the immediate aftermath yeah. of the Oprah appearance. And you were saying things like, he's not sorry, not at all. He's sorry he's lost $75 million. Mm. You've changed your mind about that.
Yeah, but it's also a year later. So I was still really angry at him. I still now, if I'd got hold of him at that time, he'd still getting a clip across the back of the head, you know, and worse. And I really genuinely, and I'd said at the Late Late Show, he did that show too, he did Oprah too soon. I still stand by that.
Yeah.
You know, even though in ways you could see that there was a bit of sincerity when my name came up. But it was still, I still think it was too soon, because now he's done a journey as well as I've done a journey. We've both done a process to get to the stage that we could both sit in the same room and we could have a beer together now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first time that happened, though, there was cameras there for the Daily Mail.
I took the Daily Mail with me. Because
why did you decide?
I didn't fully trust him, to be quite honest. And then I thought, nowadays with Twitter and everything, I said, how do I know that he doesn't have someone planted in the corner of a hotel lobby and take a picture of the two of us? It goes out, it goes viral. And I'm back in the same situation I was after I spoke to David, that I'm just there. So I thought, you know what? If I take the Daily Mail, just because I knew one of the journalists is friendly with them and I can trust him, took the Daily Mail. If Lance is genuine, well, then let's just report in a constructive manner. If he's not genuine, well, then I'm more than happy to let the world see that he's not genuine.
Yeah, because I wasn't, like, the only footage that I've seen from that is like about 2.5 minutes where they edit bits together. And
yeah.
It's hard to tell from that because he's...
One of the reasons that thing happened was when we sat down, the photographer who was there, he started trying to take pictures and the flash was going off and both me and Lance going, oh, stop, make this, stop. So we actually just ran a video.
Yeah.
So we could take stills from it. So that's how that video came out.
Because there's bits of it where he's talking to Matt Lawton, I think it is.
Yeah.
And
well, what happened with that is exactly what happens. Anytime there's a few lads, they have to start talking.
But that's... And it's
funny, I went back to the mode I used to be when I was in the cycling team. Once the lads get together and it's a bit alpha type and it's a bit, I just sit back and let them do their bit and stay out.
That's grim. I think that's grim. It's a bad thing that men do, but particularly what Lance is doing, because you're there in the chair yeah. and the two lads are like, and Lance is like this, pointing to you, like this, what the, what this is about is. And
but it was me who said to Lance, I want Matt to come. And so Lance and I actually bumped into each other in the lobby. And I said, look, let's introduce you to Matt and to Steve, the photographer. And because what we were going to do was do dinner first and then meet up with these guys after.
Yeah.
So the two of us, that was what the pair of us had arranged. And then just the way it happened, we kind of said, well, look, why don't we get the journalist and photographer a bit done with and then we'll head out to dinner. So that was partly, I was kind of biding my time too, to like, I'm not going to say much in front of the journalist because I didn't come over. I came, the reason I took the journalist was, if it's good, let's report it. If it's bad, let's report it. But I thought, well, actually, I've come over to have a proper chat with him. And I thought we'd be doing that over dinner anyway. I'll answer a couple of questions if there is, but let Matt ask all his questions, because Matt obviously...
I mean, that was what he was there for.
That was what he was there for.
And did you have a proper chat with him?
Yeah, we had a nice time then at the restaurant.
How do you trust that guy who brings that trouble to your door? I know you're saying still, and probably even at that point, you're thinking you deserved a bit of it because, you know, you were taking responsibility for your own actions, but...
I'm not justifying his behaviour in any way, shape or form. I brought a lot of trouble to his door.
But he deserved it.
Yeah, but yes, he did deserve it.
He was
completely
cheating.
Completely and utterly, he was cheating. But what I want to do is bring trouble to the system's door, to the UCI, to the doctors, to the infrastructure behind the riders. But Lance took it personally, so I took a lot of trouble to his door. Again, he took way more trouble to my door because all I was doing was telling the truth.
So I know you're not justifying it, but in some ways that allows you to say...
Quid pro quo.
Or I can forgive.
Yeah, and to be quite honest, I think the only reason I can forgive is that we had some good times before the bad times. And I think if we had no relationship before this all happened, no, we probably wouldn't have a relationship now.
Can you talk to us about that relationship? Because we don't really understand the workings of a team on a Tour de France where from the second that the first rider goes on the prologue, you guys know you have to win, otherwise it's going to be a failure with Lance Armstrong and that massive machine there.
Well, you see, when I started, we weren't a massive machine. We became a massive machine. But say, like with the 99 Tour, when everything was set, because from the Tour of Spain the previous year in September 98... Then it was planned that we're going to try win the Tour de France, and obviously with Lance. And everything from September to the following July, everything was just set in motion to win that Tour. And, you know, I think for most of us, really, we kind of had this blind belief it was going to happen. So everything was just, and everybody and everything is just to get that machine going.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just became a big, ugly monster.
And obviously at this point... He's a nice guy to be around.
Yeah, he's Lance. He's not a warm, fuzzy kind of character anyway. You know, so...
But you talk about this period of your time as being so powerfully strong, the bond that you form, that you can forgive him these terrible things. What was it that...
Yeah, and yet I suppose it is a strong bond because you create a bond with people you travel and you're on the road. It's like Tyler Hamilton and I, we spoke after Lance and I had made up. We had over a 2-hour phone call, that very first phone call we had. And in the end, the only reason it finishes, I actually had to be somewhere. And I was saying to Tyler, we haven't spoken for 12 years. When we were on the team, we actually weren't speaking that much by the end of my days. How are we having a conversation? If you've worked in an office and you didn't see someone for 10 years, you wouldn't even get 10 minutes conversation.
Yeah.
But because of all that we went through together, good and the bad, the ups, the downs, and because I guess I was kind of witness to the sacrifice, the dedication, the training, it does create a bond. There is a life, and the kind of I would have such respect for what the riding, the training, the effort, and I think that just creates some strange bond.
The trouble with what's happened with the doping culture is that it's so difficult for people to separate the cheating with the other hard work and sacrifice that goes in.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you can't give anybody any credit for that because they're doing it while they're doped to the gills.
But that was part of, for me, part of the book too, is I want to see it's a more complete picture than just taking some medication. And all that's been documented, and it's so well documented, is just the medication end of things. And that medication end of things is wrong. I stand by that. And obviously I was very clear about that it was wrong. I'm one of the few people who actually put my money where my mouth was and took the heat for it. But there is so much more to it than that.
Do you still like cycling?
I hated it for a long time, and now I've gone back to liking it. And now I've even gone and got a bike. So I'm back out riding again.
And will you watch the Tour, for example?
I will be glued to the Tour. Glued to it.
You've forgiven the sport for all the damage that it inflicted as well?
Yeah, in ways I had to. That took me a bit to forgive the sport too. You know, because it had hurt me a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
But I'm really interested in how you arrive as... a bright-eyed kid into the sport and think, this is amazing, you know, I'm getting...
How lucky was I?
I'm having the time of my life.
Living the dream.
And then it's like, oh, they're all cheating.
I think because I'd cycled when I was younger, and traditionally European cycling has had a bad name, and And I was saying before that, like, Tommy Simpson, an English writer, died in the 60s and it turned out he'd amphetamines. And so it's always had, and like other writers have failed drug tests, other writers that I would have read about when I was younger, like Freddie Martins and Pedro Delgado and other writers, they would have. So you kind of know in the back of your mind it's a dirty sport.
And you know that getting in, so it's...
And but I consciously had made a decision that I would never get involved in the medical programme. And that was my way of being all clean.
And yet ultimately you do end up getting involved because it's inevitable.
Yeah, it is inevitable. And yet I still... And like even when I left cycling, I was... A lot of the questions that journalists who got in touch with me saying, were you fired because you didn't get involved? And it just shows at the time what a period it was that I technically really didn't get involved.
Yeah. Well, except from... Yeah. Covering up Lance's bruises from the track marks. Like, that's a really interesting situation, I think, as well, because when you're trying to find a way to clean the sport up, it seems to me that it's impossible to do that. When even somebody who wants to be clean and not involved ultimately ends up getting sucked in.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the things that kind of remained in my conscience. I was kind of, the riders, how they change when they've made that difficult decision, that they've kind of lived in the dream, they're out training as teenagers, they're winning races, they're getting offered a contract, then they end up over in Europe, and then they're faced with this awful decision to have to make. And you can see they change, they stop from looking you straight in the eye, they stop from having a laugh to kind of just being withdrawn and...
It's purely a profession, it's a thing they do just for money.
Yes and no, because you still have to go out there and suffer, you still have to go out there in the rain, you still have to go out there and freeze yourself, you still have to go out there and ride the first 100k at 30k an hour, so, or whatever far an hour, 30k an hour isn't that fast, it'd be faster. But so as to get Lance to such a point, at such a point, you still have to go out and do all those stuff. So I saw those lads, you have carrying them off the bike, they're ripped to shreds from some crash. You still have to do all those things and then get back on your bike the next day and race. And so I saw all that, so I could see the humanity behind what has now become the story.
Yeah.
You know? But one of the things that always stayed in my conscience is just their faces, the way they change. And that's why I did ultimately then speak out to David. One, David's a great journalist who always felt he was going to do a good story on it. And two, I just, their lads, their faces always stayed in my conscience. That, and I felt because I wasn't in cycling, it wasn't paying me on any level, like I didn't need it, that I thought maybe I do have an obligation then to speak out. Maybe I am in a good position to speak out.
I would agree with that. I think you were right about that.
Yeah.
Obviously, look, it results in you now writing this book and forgiving Lance. And that whole process of forgiveness, obviously you switched from being angry and still wanting to clip him around the head just after the interview to going over and sitting and having those conversations with him in that restaurant. How does he prove to you that he's not the guy who wants to break you and calls you terrible things in the court?
Well, it took 11 months from when he first got back in touch with me to him and I sitting down. That was 11 months. It took us 10 months before we even spoke. It was a big, long process for both of us and a long, drawn-out process that I'd kind of ask him questions and he had to come back with answers. And so it took a long time.
Given that he used everybody so horribly along the way to get to the top, At what point do you get comfortable that he's not just using you again?
I have to go on my instinct. My instinct says he's not.
He manages to convince you of that, though, at some point.
I guess I haven't asked him, in a sense. And I guess, too, say with bringing over the newspapers, that was my choice. And like even, I remember I emailed him, I phoned him, and I texted him to say, you're up to something. What are you up to?
Yeah.
You don't let go of control. And he's going, nothing. And I did that, and I then still emailed him again, even though when I spoke to him, so I kind of heard him. He had to text me, but he then had to email me it. And I'm still going, now, come on. You know, and so even right to meeting him, that's why I took someone with me to kind of protect my interests. And I still didn't fully trust him. That kind of come probably since our meeting.
The decision to get him to write the foreword, very controversial, I have to say, because like the rest of us aren't in that kind of situation where we have any interactions with this guy. Yeah. We just see him as somebody who used the full force of his law and millions of dollars to chase people who were telling the truth.
Yeah.
Which is the total, that is exactly what happened.
Oh, it is exactly, and it's exactly what he did, yeah.
And, there's a possibility that it will damage your book in some way, that people will go.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So it's a big decision for you to go.
But I wanted the book to be authentic. I wanted it to be genuine. And also I wanted to, and maybe it's part of my journey, I wanted to show that for me, that actually I personally have done the full journey, that we've gone from kind of me working together to us being friends, to us being complete enemies, to us actually now redeveloping a friendship. And a friend would do you a favour for your book.
And what's that friendship like now?
It's good. It's easy. That's what the bizarre thing is. It actually did just start slotting back in. You know, and it's one thing I've... I even said to Matt, the journalist, he's gone, what, you might? And I said, I'll tell you one thing about Lance. He's told me a few times that he's got no agenda. He just wants to meet me. He's bringing no one. I said, he attacks from the front. You know what's coming if he's going to go. So I guess in that sense, from my perspective, I'm not clever enough to go with people's agendas. I can take someone if they're coming at me from head first.
Yeah, well, you're a very reliable witness from his perspective. You saying that you now forgive him and trust him, there's about five or six people in the world who, if he gets that from those people, then the rest of the world can go, oh, well, that's all right, we can get past this now.
You think, though, because I think everybody's entitled to their opinion, and just because I say something or I've moved on to something...
But you're a very powerful person in this. It goes back to the point of that you made in the interview with David Walsh. You're a hugely important source as this...
I suppose I can sit there and say, and I wouldn't have thought I was an important source. And that's probably one of the things where David and I miscommunicated, because I thought I was just a minor source. And because I'm a soigneur, I'm nobody. Do you know what I mean? So because that bit, it took me, even onto the late, late, you're not seeing Seven Deadly Sins going, yeah, I was your Christmas. I was a few of your Christmases. It took me to that stage to realise that. But I would still say I'm just a normal person. That's why this whole thing kind of almost sits uncomfortably with me. I haven't brought about the change in cycling. If I flatter myself, I'd hope I helped to bring about the change. But all I am is a small cog.
But now you're a very powerful source for people to go, okay, well, people are beginning to get over what Lance did to them. People like Emma are beginning to forgive him what happened. Yeah. And maybe that is hugely beneficial to him.
Maybe, but it's hugely beneficial to me.
Well,
it's been great for me, because I've gone back to being who I used to be, that I'm much lighter and kind of more young at heart, freer.
Yeah.
And also I kind of feel as human beings in a civilised society, is not part of being mature and being civilised, actually forgiving and forgetting and learning from things.
Is that
not part of why we're not living in caves anymore?
It's supposed to be, yeah.
You know?
But I suppose, look, in fairness, I started off by talking about how it was very confusing, but ultimately that's the explanation, and that's a very powerful explanation to have been on that journey yourself.
Yeah, yeah. It's been good for me. Yeah.
But you don't want somebody to play in the movie?
No, I just, you know, I don't... Funny enough, I've done the book, but the book was actually part about me and about my journey in a sense. But the whole movie thing and all of that...
This is the end for you in this?
I think so. But you know what? I keep saying that with the Lance story. This is the end. That's it. I'm finished. But I'm afraid to say this is the end, but I can't see how there's anything after this.
Yeah. Mm. And you'll go back to a normal life.
I love my normal little life. I love it. And you know what? Even when I met up with Lance and we did the interview, and then what I did is I went straight from the airport straight into work, because no one can get to me in work. You know, I work in a little clinic. Happy days, you know.
When you're sitting on the couch watching Oprah and thinking, I was a soigneur and here I am and Oprah's talking about me to the possibly at that week the most famous person on the planet, is that a weird moment?
It's really weird.
It must be.
It's really, really weird. It's because there you've met me. I'm normal. I'm not. You know what I mean? It's just like, Oprah has heard of me. Wow. Do you know that? Yeah. Just, and even there when we came over here, we stopped at a bookshop and my book's in a bookshop in De Brays, kind of. And I was like, wow, you know, that's me. But it is. The whole thing is just surreal, you know.
Well, listen, congratulations on the book. It teaches us all a lot about life. It's called The Race to Truth and it's in all good bookshops now. Emma, thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Jer. Thanks for having me.
It's Lance Armstrong week here on OTB.
Are you a complete rookie?
OTB Gold.
Listen to our interviews with the people closest to his story on the OTB Podcast Network.
Are you crazy?